you
yeah.
Open.
Yeah.
Well, this just make the default capillaries and put that upside down. That would be different, you know?
Yeah. And so, like, because I feel like the patent should have run out on that a long time.
Oh,
yeah, I would think so. But that's why I like this one, because it still works.
Wait a minute, wasn't the Corey keyboard on the typewriter?
Yeah, it was designed
for
the typewriter to be the slowest possible, or like the most
limiter.
The furthest part, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we just never.
So that way the thing's prongs come on a phone to jam.
Yeah.
Oh, I had so much fun with my grandpa's typewriter, always jamming his typewriter.
You found me.
Yeah, they always get stuck.
That was a fun part right there.
Yeah.
Really cool typing on those things.
And you gotta push down, it goes ka-chunk.
Yeah.
Ka-chunk.
Yeah,
and you know, kind of a feel to it that your keyboard doesn't. You know. Right, yeah. That's IBM Selectrix, yeah.
Programmed in Excel feedback.
Those are cool.
Okay. So you can have a typewriter for your iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was going to buy my dad one, but then I realized it was like $300.
Yeah,
I was like, no.
You're going to get a really useless thing?
Yeah.
Wow.
Useless is great.
I might realize it was buying one iPhone.
It's like a regular typewriter.
It's a regular typewriter.
It's like, it's like this big. It's like this big.
Turn back into my ear.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah. I mean, my mom still uses a typewriter.
Is it really space?
Well, it's an electric typewriter. So
it's
got backspace. So it's got like the whole whiteout.
Okay.
Awesome. Do you think we'll get heat transfer out today?
I hope so.
Another test.
Yeah.
Is there taking a C class?
No.
How long do you think?
Yeah, apparently they said.
I'm glad he gives the answer to that afterwards, because I did how I did, but
yeah.
Except I don't know. Because
yeah, well, I don't think he's gonna be.
He's very.
Oh, is he? Yeah, I got all the answers right. I just wonder how many points he's gonna nick.
Oh,
so
you got them all right.
Okay.
Yeah, I got them all right. The last one, I'm just worried about like the actual equation, but I know I got the answers right. Like, you know, all this steady state.
Yeah, I realized I forgot a minus.
Okay, well, you probably ought to start here. I went and fiddled around with things a little bit, and I found one mistake in our example problem that we've been doing. And that is, I don't know what I was thinking, but those sample and hold things are not the A to D converters, they're the D to A converters. So you need to put the sample and hold just before the U. Oh, my simulation still doesn't work, so there's some other problem.
Wait.
But at least that's one problem.
So we
so. So sample and hold is equivalent to D to A, or zero order hold, which also is known as sample and hold.
And that's D to A from the
B to
D?
No, it's sample and hold is D to A. And that's why I decided maybe I better go back and look at chapter 4. We kind of did that in signals, but there's also a few things that we didn't do in signals in chapter 4. Which, you know, we didn't really do the zero order hold very much. We did it a little bit. Actually, if you remember, well, I can show you. What I want to do is I want to just go through this chapter 4 here in kind of turbo mode in the same way we did chapter 6. You remember that? You know, that was a kind of a review chapter for the state space stuff. So I want to do chapter 4 in the same way, and you'll see in there why it should be a D to A. Now, this is a common mistake, I think, because, you know, when I went looking at, and it may be possible that you can actually commute the things in many cases, okay? You know, you could do the sample and hold at the A to D state or in the D to A state. But we need to fully understand what's going on there so we don't mess up, okay? So that's why I thought it was a good idea to go back and just review this stuff that we kind of know from signals. And Austin, of course, is kind of be new stuff for you, but you need to learn this because it's important to know what we're doing with this, you know, converting things to digital. So anyway, those the sample and hold should be the D to A, not A to D. Okay. So Brian.
Just a quick question on the framework.
Mm-hmm.
You say to assume the C matrix is the identity matrix.
Right. So that means you have all the states available, so you can just do state
we have
pair.
All the states.
Right. We don't have to do really in real life when we control the thing. We're going to have to do an observer. Okay. Which is that, you know, going to simulate the states that we don't know, probably, you know, a reduced order observer. And that's what we're going to need actually to balance the pendulum up there. But what I figured was if I give you a homework problem like this to actually, you know, simulate it in PsyCoS or SciLab, this will help you review the stuff you should have done, you know, that you did back in feedback and control. Because basically, you know, you have this big, you know, A matrix now, right? And you can use the place place thing in MATLAB, you know, to find the place where to place the poles. It'll tell you what the gain matrix needs to be. So then you take your outputs and feed it back in, and you'll get a little experience with Simulink or SciLab, right? And you'll also be working with the result that you got from your homework, okay? And hopefully, by working with that, you may find any mistakes that you made in the thing. Okay, so what I would say is assume the parameters from our pendulum. Okay, and I wouldn't advise doing this with the springy one. Do it with the other one. Okay, so this will be instead of, you know, six state variables, only four or something, right? Whatever it is, I think that's what it is.
It's the same number, it changes.
It shouldn't be the same number because you see there's a spring in between. Now you have two masses, right? Every time you have a new mass, there's a new degree of freedom, you get two more state variables, right? So let's see, we've got the cart position right now, that's one state variable, and its derivative, so that's two. And then there's the pendulum. And its state variable, that's two. Is there something else? Two pendulums. Yeah, okay. Yeah, right. Two pendulums. So it's six, and the other one goes to eight. Because the other one, you're going to have all those, plus now you're going to have the mass of the motor as well, right? The moment of inertia of the motor, that's, you know, another freedom. In other words, you can turn that without moving the cart, right? Right now, with the other one, we assume when we turn this, it mechanically moves the cart. There is no spring in there. In other words, you can't hold this one constant and turn this. It'll break, right? So we're assuming that, you know, so you're going to have six, I guess, with two pendulums, right? Yeah, so. So anyway, take that one without the spring, and then, you know, try and see whether you can, you know, use the parameters. I think the parameters are on the wiki. Oh, man, the wiki. Oh, boy. I don't know if any of you guys have looked at the wiki lately, but on Tuesday afternoon, I decided to update the Ubuntu software from 12.04 to 14.04, which is, you know, a two-year jump. And I was here till like 10 o'clock at night, you know, just getting the new software updated. And then a bit, well, not 10 o'clock, probably 8 o'clock but on Tuesday night. And then I spent a little bit more time at home working on that. And then all day yesterday morning, I was working on it from home. And then all afternoon, I was working on it from here. And finally, I've got it back up and running again. But the math still doesn't print on the wiki. So I've got to fix that. I had to get ready for class today. So I had to quit, you know, whenever it was last night, probably.
Well, we were still getting the information, but I did notice that the URL changed. Yeah, like I would type it in and it failed for a little while.
Yeah, right. No, I had.
But it came back. So.
Yeah, it came back. Yeah, that was one of the N bugs that I had to fix. So anyway, my apologies if that slowed you down. I hope it wasn't too bad. But anyway, it's back up except the math doesn't print. All you see is you see the math tags and then the stuff in there. You can still figure it out, but it doesn't look right. Yeah. It doesn't look good. Okay, so anyway, my idea is that by doing this, we'll revive your feedback stuff that had to do with state variables. Okay, and It will also be useful for you when you're actually doing the digital controller, because when I've been doing like this little example, you know, what I call example 7.1, this one right here that I still haven't got working right, you know, having the analog controller work was a useful step, okay, in the whole process. Sometimes it's nice to have some things to compare with. I still haven't figured out, you know, exactly what's going on with this thing right here, even though I, you know, spent a little more time working on it. Still it diverges, and it shouldn't diverge. So anyway, I got to look at that. There's some differences between Xcose and Simulink. I got Simulink written up here twice. I'm getting it. Scilab here. But, there's some differences. I like the way Simulink, you know, when you just put it in there, you put the sample period for the, you know, the discrete block, and it's a little clearer what's going on, I think, you know, than when you have to put the clock up there and you have to tell it when it's sampling, you know, what the offset is and what the sampling period is. In some ways, you know, it's okay, but I still haven't, you know, got that going. And I haven't tried it in Simulink.
I
played it diverged too. So we got something wrong. And that's something we have to figure out, because we have something theoretically wrong, I think, in our simulation. Okay? So we got to figure out what's going on. We're doing something wrong here, and that will zap us up here if we don't figure it out, right? I mean, not in this one, but when we do the real thing upstairs. If we can't do something simple like this, then we, you know. So anyway. And like I said, it is the example in the book. So. Okay, so let's look at this thing. Are there any questions before we go look at chapter 4?
Well, besides the, I still understand the zero order hold. It seems like it's.
Why is it D to A?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see that over here. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll postpone that till we get to it here.
Okay.
Hopefully that helps. Any other questions? Okay, well, let's go over here to chapter 4. And this, of course, is in your book. And this book is good. It's quite readable. You know, I'm making little notes where I find little things that are wrong. There are some little mistakes in here and there, right? It hasn't really been totally proofread, you know. But I think it's really pretty decent, okay? And you know, now that I look back, this idea of jumping to chapter 7 was maybe not the best idea. I should have at least breezed through chapter 4, okay? And maybe even chapter 5. Because chapter 5 is kind of doing the same stuff that we've been doing in chapter 7 with our example here, but without the state space. So, I don't know. So I decided to go back and look at this just to make sure I wasn't forgetting something. So this is all about sampling. So here, this is an A to D converter. You put in a continuous signal R of T, and you get this. This is a star. R star of T is what he calls it, okay? Now, what does he mean by R star? Well, this is the same sampling process that we talked about earlier in class. R star of T is delta of T times R of 0, delta of T minus T times R of T, right? So his R star of T is this sum from 0 to infinity of delta of T minus KT times R of KT, okay? So it's basically what happens when you multiply the R by that string of delta functions, not going from minus infinity to infinity this time, just starting at 0, okay? Or if you want to, you can think of it as taking R of T times U of T, okay? R of T times U of T is something that turns on at time T equals 0, right? And then multiplying that by the string of delta functions that goes from minus infinity to infinity, just like we did in signals, okay? Okay, so that's what R star is. R star is our sampled system. Remember, if we took the Laplace transform of R star, that basically gave us what the Z transform was, except Z was e to the s capital T, right? Which is our thing. We said Z equals e to the s capital T. That's what we've been using, right? So basically, this is the Z transform. So let's look at the pictures here. You kind of remember this. Here's R of T. multiplied by this equals that. This is not convolve. That's multiply. Okay? Got that? That means multiply, like in MATLAB star, not, okay? Not convolve. This is a little bit tricky, sometimes these little things, and I think there's some confusion in this, you know, book a little bit about this, okay? It is not convolved, it's star.
It's, that's what it says in the caption, it says convolution of continuous signal.
Well, it's not this thing convolved with that thing, right? Because then you get this thing repeated every time you got that one of those delta functions, right? It is not. That is a mistake. It is not. It even says, you're like you say, it does say it in there. It does say convolved. It is multiplied. You can see. This is multiplied, is it not, to get this? Right?
Even though everything points to convolution.
Well, it's convolution in frequency, but not in time. Okay? So if we change to frequency, it's convolution, but not in time. So this thing, you can get out your little book and go like there. I mean, maybe I should make a little note here. Like, you can do that here. You can add an annotation here. And you just put here. Okay, so if I do that, I can just put that little note over there, okay? So you can make little notes in your PDF. Or you can, like me, print them out, you know, and make notes. So there are little places you need to do that. Okay? So go through and read this chapter, and you will see stuff. But anyway, this is, R star is this multiplication, right? Are there any questions about that? I mean, that's all old stuff from signals. Okay. So then, if we go down here, there's the sifting property of the impulse function. Do you remember the sifting property? Mm-hmm. Basically, you know, if you integrate f of t times delta of t minus a, you get f of a. You know, wherever that impulse function popped up, it evaluates the function right there at that point. Okay? Okay. And that comes from the Laplace transform delta of t is 1, or you can just put in 1 for f of t and you'll get that. And a, 0 for A. Okay, so now if you look at R star of S, this would be the Laplace transform of R star of T, and you end up with this thing right here, which is the Z transform if you replace E to the TS with Z. Okay? We did that already in class, right? Okay. So
that'd be Z to the K.
Yeah, E to the TS. E to the KTS is Z to the K. Or this guy right here is Z to the minus K. Okay? Z to the minus K. Okay, so here's our sample and hold, and hopefully this will answer your question, Eric. Okay, first of all, you see, he says D to A, right? Okay, now let's think about what happens in this case. So when we go R of T here with the A to D, we end up with R star of S, okay? That's those impulse functions, bing, 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 bing. You know, you just saw the picture earlier, right? Okay, now, remember that multiplication in frequency is the same thing as convolution in time, right? Okay, so let's, this thing right here, this zero order hold, let's see if we, there's a picture down here. Here's the zero order hold impulse response, okay? It's just a pulse and it lasts capital T seconds, okay? So if I convolve this pulse, basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to multiply in the S domain by this transfer function, which convolves that pulse, this pulse down here with that stream of impulses, okay? Now, when you convolve some function with an impulse, it's something like this, you know, if I do f of t convolved with delta of t minus a, or delta, I can make it delta of t minus t zero. Okay, so this is I'll just do it. We're going to convolve it with n cap t. It's moved over by n cap t, right? So I want to convolve this. So if I convolve that, that's this integral, minus infinity to infinity of, and then I take f, and I have to replace it with, I could make it, put it tau or something, and then I put delta of, and this guy I have to replace with t minus tau. So this is t minus tau, and then I've got minus n cap t d tau. This is the convolution integral for this convolved with that, okay? This is just one of those impulse functions in the r star of t, okay? So if I do this, I can use the sifting property of the delta function to integrate this, and I get f evaluated at wherever this impulse function pops up, which is t minus n cap t. Right? So what did that do? That when I convolved this thing with that, it just replaced wherever that delta function was with this function. Okay? It just took this function and put it wherever the delta function happened to be. Well, that makes sense, because, you know, what is this convolution was the thing. Remember, you took the impulse response, convolved it with the delta function that gave you the impulse response, right? I mean, this is what happens when you put it into a linear system. You know, you put a delta function in, you get the impulse response out. If you put it a delta function or a function in if you want to know what happens, you know, nt seconds later, well, it's the same thing. It's just shifted by nt, right? So this makes sense. This is, you know, what convolution does. So it just moves that over. So now let's go look at what happens when we do that convolution. So let's see if they have a picture. Maybe not. We'll go back up here and look at this thing. Where was this thing? Okay, so here's our gadget right here. So if I take that little pulse that was cap t wide, and I replace that delta function with that pulse, it looks like a little box that's that high, right? And then this one gives me a little box that's that high. And this one gives me a little box that high, and gives me a little box that high, and so on. And it makes a little stair-step function, right? And that's what comes out the D to A converter. We've all seen that on D to A converters, right? I mean, you know, you just see, you know, that's what comes out the D to A converter. That's not, that's a continuous function. I mean, it's something we see on the oscilloscope, right? It's a continuous function. Or maybe it's got discontinuities, but what I mean is it's a continuous time function. It's not something in the computer. It's out in our world, right? Does that make sense? So it has to be, that's what comes out a D to A converter, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's what we're going to put back into our motor input or something, right? We're going to have the D to A converter is sending data to that motor, which is going to move our pendulum cart back and forth, right? That means the sample and hold thing we're looking at is a D to A converter, just like he says, right? This is the D to A. This is the A to D. What does it do? It just measures that function every capital T seconds, right? It puts that data, R of K, into the computer, right? They're just numbers now, right? That's inside the computer. There's no function of time. I mean, if we want to think of it a function of time, it's got impulses there, right? Okay, so I should have put the D to A, right? I actually did that. I guess I could show you that. But, you know, and let's see if I can find it here. Which one is it? It's probably this one. Yeah, so I put the sample and hold down here going into the input. I removed the sample and holds from right here and right there, okay? Or, yeah, I think that's where I removed them down, right here and right here. So I put it down here, just one, right? There's only one D to A. It's the I'm going to my input here. There's two A to D's because I've got two states, that one and that one, right? But it still diverges, okay? So it didn't help. And interestingly enough, I guess while we're thinking about this, this is kind of a question of what order do you do things, right? The A to D or the D to A, right? And here was a control system. I actually got a demo. I opened a demo up. And the way this did work before I started messing with it was, you know, this output came right down here, went into the sample and hold, okay? And then it went from there to there, and then it went from there back over to here, okay? So it was just coming out of here, going right straight through here like that, right? And this was backwards too, right? Because they had the sample and hold before the... This is a Z here. You can't see it because my cursor's on it. But this is a discrete transfer function, right? You're supposed to put the sample and hold after the discrete transfer function. Well, you know, I ran both simulations and they're both the same. So in this case, I think you can swap the two. And I haven't actually... You could kind of show this in Simulink, you know. And take, you know... Sample and hold, function of z, right? And look at the output, or change the order, right? And take the difference and see whether you end up with zero, right? You know, in Simulink, kind of prove it at least for some example transfer function, right? You could do that. And for this example, notice I got it in the right order here. I go through the z stuff, and then I go through the sample and hold here, right? But... this was an example doing it the other way, right? This is supposed to be a psychos example that showed you a digital control system, which, you know, was good. But I think they should have done it backwards. But I still am not totally sure I understand, you know, the orders of sample and hold. That's one of the things I need to look at, because I think you can think of it both ways, kind of, right? Into that, mm-hmm. And you'd get, you know, if you did your thing, would you get the same thing? And I think, you know, at least approximately you do, maybe exactly, you know. So anyway, I want to go, we need to understand the sample and hold business a bit better, okay? Because it's actually the D to A converter, and we're doing D to A converter, we need to understand it, okay? And we're also doing these Simulink things, and you know, that's where I'm not sure I've got it quite figured out what exactly happening. I think I have a pretty good idea what to do in the real world, but I'd like to be able to simulate that, right? And I'm a little bit nervous because my simulation for my easy thing wasn't working, okay? That means there's something wrong that I don't understand there, and I got to figure it out. Okay, so anyway, back to PDF here. Okay, so here we have the A to D and the D to A. So this is the star operation. This is the sample and hold, okay? And the sample of hold transfer function, by the way, let's go back up and look at that. It is, well, maybe it's down here. I guess it's down, the sample and hold. Here's the sample and hold. This is the sample and hold impulse response. So we take the Laplace transform of this, we get the sample and hold transfer function, right? So if I take the Laplace transform, that's the Laplace transform of U of t minus the Laplace transform of U of t delayed by one time, right? And so Laplace transform of U of t, 1 over s, delayed by one time is this, right? So it's 1 minus e to the minus ts over s, right? Okay. Okay, I'm lost as the... Why would it go on to infinity? In other words, this pulse is made up of two parts. If I take and take U of t, which goes on for infinity, right? And then I subtract U of t minus capital T, then that will give me just this, right?
Okay, right.
Is that okay? Is that okay? So then, and then I can do the Laplace transforms of each of these guys pretty easily, right? U of t I know is 1 over s. And this guy's just U of t delayed by t, so that's 1 over s, and I have to multiply it by e to the minus ts, the delay operator, right? Okay. So this is the sample and hold transfer function in the s space, okay, s domain. And this is h of t, the impulse response, right? Now, it's interesting to note that, you know, if we want the frequency response of this thing, we can plug in s equals j omega, right? And we can get the frequency response of this dude right here. kind of. Because actually there's some brushing under the carpet going on here, which we'll show you in a minute. But it's correct. It's correct, even though there's a little fishy business going on. Sometimes you find that, you know. The way you got to the answer was maybe not super rigorous, but it was gave you the right answer. Okay, so here's our transfer function. We got that. Now let's look at the frequency response of these things. And this is going to be a review from signals, okay? So I'm kind of going to go kind of fast here. So Fourier transform, here it is. Okay, this is just the Fourier transform. We were used to, in signals, we plugged omega was 2 pi f, right? Other than that, this is our friend from signals. So sorry, Austin. This will be your friend from signals. When you get to signals, he'll be your friend from digital control. Okay. And the Fourier series. You guys remember the Fourier series right here? It's the same thing. This is from LNA, but we also did in signals, right? This is the complex Fourier series, goes minus infinity to infinity with an e to the j gadget there, right? And the frequency here is n over cap t, and there's a bunch of harmonics, different ones, right? And this works for f of t is periodic. And here was your C sub n's right here, okay? These were the coefficients for that guy right there. And if you look at this, this is really like a dot product between f of t and this e to the j thing here. There's two things to remember from signals. First of all, when we do dot products with complex numbers, we have to take the complex conjugate of the second number. That's why this is a minus right here. And dot products are you take the x component times the x component plus the y component times the y component plus the z component times the z component. Well, these things have a lot of components, not just x, y, and z. They have one for every possible t. So I take the f of t is the tth component of f, multiply it by the tth component of this complex conjugate of this vector right here, and then I add them all up. That's the integral, okay? So this is actually an inner product. And it gives you, this C sub n is the projection of this f onto that basis function, which is just like what you'd have with regular vectors, you know. The number in front of the a sub x, you know, the unit vector in the x direction, is the projection of the vector onto the x axis, right? So this is stuff that we kind of learned in signals. You get the C sub n's here, and actually, for you can remember where this thing right here came from, okay? If you believe this right here, and you take the limit as the period of this function goes to infinity, as cap t goes to infinity, well, if the period of a function is really, really large, it might as well not be periodic anymore, right? If it repeats itself only every infinite time. So if you do that, then what happens is those t's right there become infinities. Those are those infinities right here. This f of t is that f of t, and this n over cap t becomes an f, okay? And so you e to the minus j 2 pi f t dt. This and that are the same. So those C sub n's and the Fourier transform are really the same thing. This guy is giving you how much in each direction of e to the j omega t you have. And now instead of having ones that are discrete, that are kind of like, you know, every capital 1 over capital T apart, or every, you know, every harmonic apart. And those harmonics, as T goes to infinity, those harmonics get closer and closer and closer together till they become a blend into a continuum, okay? And so that's the Fourier transform there. And so this was a review from signals, okay? My apologies to Austin.
We got all that in feedback, basically.
Okay, so you did that. Okay, good. So now we have this impulse train right here. And if you think about this impulse train, this is the guy we multiplied by r of t to get r star of t, right? Now this guy, if you look at him, he just is an impulse, and then an impulse, and then an impulse. It's a periodic function with a period of capital T, right? So we could write the Fourier series for this guy very easily, right? So let's do that. If you do that, end up with this guy is written as a Fourier series. They found the C sub n's here. They all happen to be 1 over t. Okay? So this guy right here equals that guy right here. This is the Fourier series for that guy. Okay? This guy is easier to graph, but this guy is in the frequency domain, and you can see in the frequency domain, you basically have an impulse every, the frequency here would be what is the frequency? 2 pi ft. F, the frequency is kind of like, what is the frequency? It's 1 over t right here, right? I mean, in frequency space, you have things spaced out every 1 over t. So you can see they're all the same. So actually, if we were to take the Fourier transform of this guy, you would see at every frequency, you'd get right there an impulse every a value 1 over t or area 1 over t, and it would happen at every one, you know, at 0, there'd be 1. At 1 over t, there'd be 1. At 2 over t, there'd be 1, and so on. So let's look at, here's r star of t. I lost it. Yep, down here. R star of t is just r of t times 1 over t times this guy. That's just another way of writing it. Instead of writing it, just multiplied by these impulses, right? And then we can go take the Fourier transform or the Laplace transform of this thing. So they did the Laplace transform of r star of t, right? And notice, actually, this shouldn't be Laplace. This should be, well, no, wait a minute. I guess. And there's some little things that, little details here that are a little bit problematic. Laplace transform, normally we would go 0 to infinity, but you can also do a two-sided Laplace transform going minus infinity to infinity, and that's what they're doing here. And remember, r of t was really thought of as an r of t times u of t. In other words, we said it was 0 until time t equals 0, then it jumped up, because remember, in our thing, when we didn't really take this times the infinite ones, it went from 0 to infinity, right? Or if you thought about r of t as being, you know, from r of t times u of t, this would have been from 0 to infinity, and down here you would have had 0 to infinity, but, you know, assuming we didn't do that, we did it like this, you can kind of look like this. So here's this r, and this is kind of like they plug this thing in here, right? And so when you just multiply those e to the j's together, you can gather them like this. And then this is the Laplace transform of r of t, except s got replaced with s minus j times n times omega sub 0, which was, omega 0 was 2 pi over cap t, okay, right here. Or I guess they're calling omega sub s. I can't read very well. Whatever it is, omega sub s, I guess. So anyway, what you end up with is you end up with these guys that are repeated every j times n times omega sub s. So it repeated the thing. The Laplace transform is a bunch of addition, a bunch of things added on top of one another. And each one is shifted over by a little bit on the j omega axis. So if you think about the S plane, you got something on the S-plane, but then you had to move it up a little bit and add it in, move it up a little bit and add it in. That's what the process of sampling did, okay? It took whatever you had on the S-plane on a sheet this way, right? And if it was something that was band-limited, it would only be in this little region of frequencies here. And then it moved it up and added it in everywhere, okay? So that's what you got right there. Now, he has this statement here that f of s is the Laplace transform of f of t, then the Fourier transform is just given by replacing s with j omega. Well, that's true a lot of the time, but not all of the time, okay? Like, for example, the Fourier transform of u of t is not just 1 over j omega. There's also a delta of t in there, or delta of f in there, 1 over j 2 pi f. So this is not quite always true here, okay? But in many cases, it is, okay? And so this result is actually true right here. We came up with this result another way in signals and systems. We didn't take the Laplace transform back there where they were doing the Laplace transform. We just did the Fourier transform. Okay. Well, what he's trying to do here is he's trying to use Laplace transform as much as possible because the people that he's teaching are much more comfortable with Laplace transform than Fourier transform. Okay. So he's kind of brushing some stuff under the carpet right here, but this result is correct. Basically, it says, you know, the frequency spectrum gets repeated, right? We saw that in signals. Those are the aliases, right? So let's look at the pictures here. So here he ended up with this thing right here. This was the original thing, right? When he sampled it, it ended up being this thing. These are the replicas, you know, and they keep going forever, right? Okay. And if in this case, you could get back to the original signal by running a perfect low-pass filter right here and getting rid of all these ones that go up at higher frequencies, right? What that means is you haven't lost any data about your signal. No information is lost. Everything is you can go backwards on this thing. You know, you did your sampling, right? And now you can go backwards and you can get back to R of T from R star of T, right? All you have to do is convolve it with the impulse response of a perfect low-pass filter, or just filter it with a perfect low-pass filter, you've got it. And you can do that mathematically. Down here, however, you can't do it because notice this thing has frequency components that go too high, right? So that when you add this one with the one that overlaps here, they overlap in this region right here, right? So you end up with something like, ooh, this part right here is not right, right? Does that make sense? That means, what this means is you got to have at least two samples of the highest frequency component of your system. In other words, right here, if you did this thing right here, the faster your sampling rate goes, the more it moves these guys to the right. You know, it spaces them out, the faster your sampling rate. If you're going infinitely fast, it shoves them way out to infinity, right? If you're not sampling very fast, then so if you slow down your sample rate, it brings these things together. And if you bring them down too much, they'll overlap like this. You weren't sampling fast enough. And that's this Nyquist sampling theorem. Okay. And you guys did that all in signals. So he talks about the sampling theorem right here. And here's a picture of the, in the time that shows you the same kind of thing. So here we had this signal right here going up and down very quickly. Notice how it's going up very fast. It's a high frequency signal. But we sampled it once here, once here, once here, once here. And we didn't get more than 2 points per cycle because, you see, to get 2 points per cycle, I would have to have one here and one there. I couldn't wait till over here, right? Does that make sense? And so if I do sample this thing, I get that one, that one, that one. You know, I'm sampling it every integer here, right? And I would get these points right here. And then if you just throw the little stars, your eye would tell you it was this signal, not that fast-moving one, right? So there are really two possibilities there, right? And if you low-pass filter it, you will get the low signal, not the high signal. And if it was the high signal that started you, basically what you did was what happens in the radio when you do this down conversion. You know, that multiplying by cosine omega t, you know, it's essentially the same kind of thing. It's a frequency shifting operation. And you can use sampling to down convert if you want, okay? So that's called aliasing. You know, the idea is that, you know, it turned out at a lower frequency than it was supposed to. And if you look up in frequency, really what's happening is we had something that was originally up here, right? Right here, but then it ended up showing up, you know, from this guy, if he was up here, from this guy, it's down here. So it ended up being at a lower frequency. Except in our case, these things overlap much more. It was like more way down here, and it was supposed to be way up here, right? Okay. So it came from, there was really something out, you know, way up here somewhere, and it ended up being back down here when you put in this one right here, it ended up being over here. Okay, so that's all old stuff, the sampling theorem. Here's the picture we just looked at. And then they talk about reconstruction, in other words, getting back to R of T from the sampled thing. Here's your low-pass filter, perfect low-pass filter. gives you back to this, right? And if the frequency spectrum is right, that means the time spectrum is right, because it's like a vector just being in a different different coordinate system, you know? So if you can recognize it's right in frequency, that makes it right in time. And basically what happens is when you convolve with the impulse response of this, that's the same thing as multiplying by this square in frequency, which is a filtering operation. So what they need to do is find out what the impulse response of this square is. And they do that here, and it ends up being the sink of pi t over cap t. Okay? So the inverse Fourier transform of that, you know, pulse is that. And you remember that from signals. And so then r of t is the convolution of the r star of t with that sink function, right? Okay. And so if we look at what happens, here's the r of t, and you can do the convolution, and you just work out the math. It's not too hard to do the math, because convolving with a delta function is easy, right? It just replicates things like we just showed, and you end up with r of t is really this guy right here. So if you had a signal generator that put out sync functions, okay, and you multiplied it by your r of kt, right, which you have in your computer. So instead of doing these pulses, like the zero order hold, if you use these things, okay, and you put those things out, and you would shift them, you know, this one, and then move that over by a little bit, and put that one out, and add them all up, right? If you did that, you would end up with the exact thing, okay? Okay, so what happens is, in real life, we end up passing it through this low-pass filter, or this is a low-pass filter. This is the zero-order hold, right? We put out those things that go chung, 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 right? And we probably don't use a perfect low-pass filter, that brick wall filter that we just looked at. We just do this chung, 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 you know, step thing. And so what that does is we take this guy right here, you plug in S equals J omega, and this is where it's a little bit flaky, because when you take the Fourier transform of U of T, it's not just 1 over J omega. There's a delta function in there, right? And so, you know, his business about that. But this is the correct result. We took the Fourier transform of that sync function, and we got this, right? So even though he's doing the substitution, and the substitution isn't right, the result is right, okay? So, I mean, that's maybe okay. It's just kind of, you know, brushing things, you know, faking you out. So here's what the transfer function looks like, okay? So you can see it's a low-pass filter, you know, kind of goes like that. Here's the phase response, magnitude response. Here was the perfect ideal, right? You can see it's not perfect, but it's not bad. You know, it's gonna distort our signal, but not too much. And so there's the angle. And then, we're about out of time here, we're going to have to stop. But next thing is, you know, you got this thing, you sampled it, got R of T, okay? So this is just the computer, it's just not doing anything to R of T. Then you put it in the zero order hold and you get this R sub H of T, which is not quite equal to R of T because it's been filtered by this thing, right? And it actually looks like a stair step thing instead of, you know, nice continuous smooth thing, right? Okay. Now, we ought to be able to see this in Scilab or Psychos, and I did a little simulation, but I'll show you that next day. You know, basically just doing that thing so you can get a little better idea, you know, what we'd see, right? Which just makes sense. Are there questions? Okay, so we've been going through this stuff pretty fast. I'd suggest you might want to go back and just read chapter 4. You know, it's probably a good idea. Take a little time, you know, ride your bike out to Whitman Mission and sit on the bench there and read chapter 4 in the sunshine for a little bit. And, you know, if there's any questions you have, come and see me. I'm going through it in ultra-turbo mode. You know, when you're just pointing at stuff on the computer, you can go really fast. I mean, this is like almost all of signals in, you know, a couple class periods, right? So... Okay, that's a good question. What is today? Today is
Wednesday.
Yeah.
I think you ought to be able to get it finally due by next Monday. What do you think?
Well,
we do it today. We initially Friday, and then finally by Monday. Is that too?
I'm not sure I'm going to have access to site.
You're going up to.
Yeah, I'm going up to Everett.
Well, if you need a little extra time, that's not a problem for you because you're.